This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of perversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
All right, hit it. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Stone.
I love the big, the sigh, and then like the, hey, I'm happy.
I can't feign my happiness right now. I am stressed out right now.
I'm going to have to include the early portion at the silence and then the, hey.
You might as well. I don't care, because right now I've got a lot of things on my mind. First and foremost, this issue is pretty much in the last throes of being completed. I've got, I think, 7 more stories to edit, which is takes me a few minutes, because the submitters usually edit their own stuff, and I just kind of go through and format it, at which point I send it over to you to put into the thing. And I think this time around, I don't know if it's been your experience, but it seems like it's working a lot more fluidly than it did last time, where we divvied everything up, and then I was implementing stuff, you were implementing stuff, then we had to go back through and reorganize. And it didn't seem to work out that well last time.
Yeah, we're slowly getting a hang of how to put these things together. I think the only thing that we really need now is just more people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, we need to take some of the burden off of us, because as it stands right now, you know, this has been a few months worth of crap, and it's like we could have been done with this probably months ago, you know? Anyway, so that's the first thing. Second thing, I'm flying out to Seattle on Wednesday. I'm pretty pumped about that. And so if anyone between now and tomorrow night when I lose access to the internet, because I will be gone, if anyone knows of any sweet shit I should go check out while I'm out there, chris@the-means.com, because we're just going to wing it. My girlfriend and I are going out there, and we're just going to backpack around the city.
Any good, you know, flannel shirt shops and stuff, yeah.
Oh, way to characterize it circa 1991.
That would be sweet, though, if there were shops like that. Grunge store! Like, store owners still trying to make a buck on that whole failed revolution.
Like, I would start a whole store called, like, Sonic Youth, and then it would have, you know, it would have every piece of garb that was worn back in the day, you know. It would be the one-stop shop for all your grunge needs. Let's see, so I'm going to be doing that, and what else is there? I don't know, and then I just start new crap at my job. You guys, you know, you're not my shrink. I'm not going to divulge all this to you anymore. I'm done. What I'm saying is, I'm tired right now. I still got to pack. I'm going to have like 2 hours to pack tomorrow when I get off of work, and quite frankly, I just want out of life. I'm ready to murder myself.
A week's worth of packing is not bad, though, you know?
No, it's not that bad. Honestly, what I did yesterday, and I tend to do this every time I go travel somewhere, and it seems to be, it's not that costly, but it's so convenient. Rather than, like, take that extra 5 minutes to pack t-shirts and socks, I go out and buy new t-shirts and socks and just don't take them out of the package, and then throw the package in my suitcase, and that's how I avoid even having to deal with, like, loose socks flying all over my backpack and shit. Yeah.
I really never thought that packing socks was that difficult, personally.
I hate it. So, and you know, and that's the other thing I hate about packing is the fact that, like, you know, before I'm ready to pack, I'm like, okay, I need this, this, and this, and then when I get ready to pack, I never wrote it down, so I've always got that feeling like I'm missing shit. I know it happens to everyone, but I hate that it happens to me. I wish it didn't.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, today we have a stunning episode of this. Just we talking about the film V for Vendetta, which I haven't seen, but Tanner has seen. He's going to enlighten us on that. We're going to talk about alcohol, secondly. And then third, I've got a wild card topic I'm just going to throw out there, bump it to Tanner, see whether or not he agrees with me, because so far I've found maybe 1 to 2 people who concur with my ideas on this mystery topic. And I think it's kind of silly, it's a humorous thing, but at the same time, it could ruin or change your life drastically. So, okay, let's start with the first topic. Tanner, kick it off with V for Vendetta. What do you have to say?
Yeah, V for Vendetta. I don't know how well it did in the theaters. I don't think it did that well. I mean, it had some buzz, blah, blah, blah.
Only among liberals, I think the buzz was really...
Yeah. It's a... Alan Moore, who's the god of comic writing, you know, wrote the graphic novel. So the Wachowski brothers sort of produced this movie. I've never read the graphic novel. You know, so this movie was my introduction to the story. And, the movie is pretty cool. You know, I wouldn't say it was a home run, great, you know, gotta see it, but it was pretty damn cool. It's better than Superman Returns, you know, for sure. And, so I enjoyed the movie. It's got a super liberal political message, and I guess that's why they came out with it. Because even though Alan Moore wrote it in probably the 80s, it seems so incredibly applicable now with, you know, conservative faith-based government sort of, restricting rights and hatching nefarious plots and creating fear and that sort of thing. And then this, this guy named V, this sort of terrorist... who we learn was manipulated in one of the government's sort of medical, biopolitical schemes, you know, comes back and he plays the sort of Guy Fawkes character that's going to, you know, unseat the government and start a revolution in this whole thing. And, you know, first of all, what's that guy's name? He was Elrond in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
and he was in The Matrix.
Hugo Weaving?
Yeah, Hugo Weaving. He plays V, and he does a real good job.
Does he do the same, like, blah, 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 blah?
No, he's got a totally different voice. I didn't even recognize that he was the guy, because he wears a mask the whole movie. So he did a great job. Natalie Portman blew.
Of course.
She had the single worst English accent in a movie I think I've ever seen. It was terrible. I mean, utterly horrible, and the movie's worth seeing just for that. But, you know, I'm a super liberal guy. I was, you know, going along with the plot. You know, granted, I don't really... It seemed... The thing that sort of fascinated me about the movie was it was sort of like Fight Club in the sense that it had ideas I could get behind, but then it sort of goes astray in how the ideas are enacted in sort of a violent, militaristic way. And what's weird about these movies is that I think a lot of people, you know, even if they're liberal, they find themselves really thinking like, yeah, we need to go shoot motherfuckers and blow shit up and do all this stuff, when, in my mind, that's sort of a conservative tactic. You know, and I see liberals as being, I guess, more enlightened and not needing to resort to violence, you know?
Yeah.
Granted, violence is necessary in certain circumstances, you know, but...
Especially in a comic book.
Yeah, obviously. And damn, man, the fights in that movie are so sweet.
Really?
Because the V guy, he's like a swordsman. And the fights are amazing. I mean, just brilliantly shot, and they look so cool. But at the very end of the movie, you know, V is all about terrorism and, like, blowing shit up, killing people, assassination, etc. So the whole time I'm like, okay, his ideas are cool, but I wouldn't be going along with this. And Natalie Portman's sort of on the fence, you know, whatever. And around the end of the movie, and I'm going to spoil it, so if you care, turn off the podcast and never listen again.
Yeah, I'm taking off my headphones.
Yeah. At the end of the movie, V decides that he is going to sort of blow up Parliament and kill himself in the process by assassinating the leaders and stuff. And... Natalie Portman is on the fence about it, whatever. It gets down to where, like, V is... I think she thinks V is dying or is worried he's going to die, so she, like, goes, you know... There's this, like, touching moment where she's like, I don't want you to die in this process. You know, it's, like, not worth it or whatever. And he's like, I've got to do it. So he goes off, does it. And I've got the impression as a moviegoer that... she had learned something, like, okay, his ideas are good, but he's going too far with it. But then at the end of the movie, he dies and leaves his whole master plan for blowing up the parliament in her hands. And it's her choice whether to blow it up or not. And she ends up fucking blowing it up! And, like, enacting his whole plan and basically becoming the next V.
Oh.
And I was sort of like... Because I know fanboys all over the world are like, yeah, V for Vendetta, man, that's our liberal, like, fucking, you know, champion, etc., etc., but... I don't agree with the tactics. It's like you're adopting the very tactics you hate. And that's like murder and killing and, you know, yeah. Subterfuge and... It's just... Yeah. And I think the same thing was in Fight Club, where at the end of Fight Club, like, okay, yeah, we were kind of going wrong with Tyler Durden, but he went too far, you know?
But see, the thing is in Fight Club, the film itself recognized he went too far.
I mean,
knowing you were going too far. Now, if this movie is presupposing that you can't go far enough if you're a liberal and you're fighting for your cause. Well, I don't know if I... I mean, I don't... I, of course, don't agree with... You don't want to stoop to any levels. And, you know, the level that most... you know, the one thing I think most real liberals can agree on is that violence is pretty much the last option. And that, you know, if you are a progressive, you know, a thinking human being, that there's always some other way to get around it. And there's really not much justification to, you know, like you said, some sort of subterfuge kind of, you know, terrorist-like tactics. The thing with this film, and it's the only thing I can think of because I've never seen it, but because it is, you know, based on a comic book hero typically, you know, almost like a Batman-type character, you know, usually takes that extreme, but is almost like wishing no one else would do that. They're just kind of...
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of taking the bullet for everyone else. They're saying, look, I'm a liberal, but... Now I've got it willing to do. I mean, maybe that's the case. I really don't know because I haven't seen it, but I think for it to be obviously a good movie, you kind of have to, or maybe not a good movie, but just to have the storyline, you kind of have to have it go to that extreme, maybe. I mean, what would you suggest they had done? Would you have rather him do some sort of diplomatic thing and at the end they sign a truce or something? I don't know.
No, I just sort of wish they would have portrayed him as maybe being... sort of just insane, and that, like, his actions, even though they're coming from a good place, have sort of become something greater and worse. You know, like, she alludes to the fact that he has been turned into a monster, but then the fact that she then does exactly what he's doing goes against it all, and it just... I was kind of left like... Man, I'm sort of worried about people watching this movie and thinking we need to become terrorists to our own government. You know, obviously that's not really happening, but it's like the message they're trying to portray, and I just don't think that is as productive as it needed to be.
Yeah.
Because a movie obviously, like that is important. I mean, I love that it was totally just destroying the Bush and Blair administrations. I mean, I love that, but then it was just the tactics were way off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking on the... First off, you had mentioned you didn't know how the box office did. It did, the budget was like $50 million, and it looks like it did about $20 million over that. So, didn't do too bad, I don't think.
Yeah, but not great.
But, I mean, there's some people on this message board who are kind of saying, like, how dare they compare the Bush administration to and the Blair administrations to the government in this film. And they're saying, you know, you can't make parallels. What do you say to that? Are there...
Well, Alan Moore wrote it in the Reagan era.
Yeah.
And Bush is just Reagan, but way worse. Okay. So, like, obviously there's a comparison, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not taking anyone's sides here, but, you know, for instance, RLA Timer 007... states that, bottom line, regardless of your political leanings, comparing the Bush administration to a fascist dictatorship that would do anything and everything to hold power, mass murder, a planned 9/11, you can go on all day, and paralleling him to the antagonist in V for Vendetta is stupid, insulting, and a waste of time. Stop this. You can debate real issues all day, such as Bush using scare tactics to win an election, blah, blah, blah. He goes on and on. He's, but a bloody totalitarian dictatorship? Garbage is how he spells it.
I think the point of the movie and Moore's point is that Bush or Reagan or Tony Blair are like the antagonist in this movie. I think his point is that there's the potential there if you keep going in this sort of direction, that fascism could take root. That you know, the pieces would all be in place to, you know, to sort of initiate that sort of government. That it's not, it hasn't happened yet, but there's hints that it could happen.
Right.
And we all need to be cognizant of that.
Gotcha. All right, well, anything else on it? Do you have any other...
No, I would recommend people get it on DVD, though, because I think it is really cool. And it sort of, it redeems the Wachowski brothers after the Matrix trilogy, you know?
Yeah, as soon as you said the Wachowski brothers, I was not really into, I didn't even know they directed it, but as soon as you said that, I kind of...
They didn't, I don't think they directed it, but they wrote and produced it, I think.
Some other guy who was the second assistant director on The Matrix Revolutions and all those other films, he directed it.
God, and you, I mean, it's worth seeing just for the cool-ass fights, man.
Yeah.
Because he just slices the living shit out of people, and it's so cool. It's like the ultimate fantasy, you know? There's just be awesome with a sword, you know?
Yeah. The next one is one that's kind of... It's come up within my life because, I guess... Well, all right, it deals with alcohol, and it has to deal with the fact that I drink a lot of alcohol. And there came a point about 2 weeks ago where I realized that I'm just drinking way too much, and it's like an every night thing. And it's not like I'll have a glass of wine with dinner. It's like I'll have, like, you know, 3/4 of a bottle of wine, you
Damn.
Know, after I've eaten like 3 hours ago, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll have or like sometimes even when we were doing these podcasts in the past, I'd be like, you know what, I need a drink. And so I would go and I would have I would pour myself a screwdriver or something like that, or you name it, where it was like, not that I needed it to have a good time, but it's like, you know, if I'm home alone, sometimes I'm bored out of my mind, and admittedly, like, one of the most fun things ever, and I'll probably never stop doing this, I just need to tone it down, but one of the most fun things ever is drinking, getting a great buzz, and playing video games
by yourself. Especially a wine buzz while playing video games. Anyone who hasn't tried that, even though we're... See, now we're turning it back around to a celebration of drinking. But in moderation, drinking wine and playing video games is just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I have more fun, I think. And it's just... It gets to be like this... I don't know, it's like this really great experience, especially, and I've experienced it more now with World of Warcraft. I used to experience it with San Andreas or Vice City, too, but but there's just a different, it's a whole different perspective you have on gaming, and I love it. So, and that would happen, but see, I mean, that would happen on those friends in a band, so we were out at bars all the time, so I'm drinking out at bars, and it started to get to where I would be coming home from work, and I would be thinking, I really want a drink. It's like 3 p.m. I'm like, I really want a drink right now. But I knew that if I drank starting then... See, and this is the other thing. My mind didn't get into that mindset that some people have where they're like, I'm going to drink because, you know, I just want to have a drink. You know, one drink doesn't get me buzzed or anything. And I, you know, the taste of alcohol, unless it's like scotch where I can savor it, I don't really like it particularly. It's not like the greatest thing in the world. I mean, I don't mind it, but it's not like my drink of choice. I like water. I like water a lot, but you know, when it comes to you know, that mindset that I had where it's like, if you drink, it's because you need to feel it, and if I'm going to feel it, a lot of times I'd overdo it. But I never got drunk where I was puking or anything like that. It was just, you know, just doing it every night though. And then finally, you know, when my girlfriend and I we were kind of getting all in the mindset of going to Seattle, and we decided that we were going to stop drinking, and by day two, I was, like, getting really edgy. I felt very, not nervous, but, like, uncomfortable in my own body kind of thing. It was this, I guess edgy, though, is the right term, because it was kind of like I felt like I was always ready to, like, make a sudden twitch somewhere, you know, and try and, like, move rapidly just to, like, get it out of my system, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the upside was my night sleeps were just unparalleled. I was dreaming really deeply. I was getting great night sleeps. I'd wake up in the morning and I actually felt great. But I don't know. I guess my thing is like, the reason why I'm bringing it up is just because, I don't know, because I know you went to college, when you were in college, you drank a lot, and now you're kind of in moderation. And what was it like for you? What was your experience when it was kind of like that sudden, you know, all right, the days of that kind of drinking are done, you know, because then you moved back home just for that brief time, saved up your cash or whatever, but during that time, I mean, you and I would get drunk every so often, but it certainly wasn't like it was in college.
I think for me, it's always the environment and the situation in life that you're living in. Mm-hmm. And drinking sort of takes this place where when you have nothing better to do, you drink, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole bar lifestyle, I sort of view now, especially the American bar lifestyle, and the club lifestyle, which we've already talked about, I view now as sort of a, okay, I've got shit to do, so I'm just going to get hammered all the time, because that's something, I'm doing something then. I mean, it's just sort of like this placeholder for idleness, I guess. And in college, you know, you go to school, and then you have massive amounts of idle hours, and it was just like, well, I guess I'll just drink, you know, and it just... And then after a while, like my senior year, I remember just going to bars and just being like, this is so stupid and boring. And then like after I left college, there just was no reason anymore because I had the means, you know. I had a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I had shit going on. You know, I had applying to graduate school. I had a job. It was all of a sudden like, okay, alcohol doesn't fit in my life anymore. I've got stuff I can sort of manage my time with. And then just... Since then, I maybe have, you know, three drinks a week, three or four, mm-hmm. if that.
When's the last time you got drunk?
Well, that was last weekend because Scott was here.
But, oh, okay.
And then even then, I was like afterwards, you know, like the next morning, because I got sick and I was just like, next morning I was just like, why did I drink that much?
Yeah.
It's just more fun to just drink a little bit. Get the buzz, have a good time, and then you feel fine the next morning. It's perfect. That's the way to go about it. Plus, it's cheap, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can drink the good stuff.
And see, here's the other thing, like, with me, I still go out to bars and stuff, and like I said, it's just kind of like an extension of, you know, being with my girlfriend. It's just, that's where she is, so when she's playing shows, I just drink, but more typically, I'm drinking at home, and or her and I are having drinks together or whatever, and we'll just like, you know, one night we'll go out and I'll buy like a fifth of vodka for me or whatever, and I don't do the whole fifth, but you know, I'll drink maybe half of it sometimes, and it's on like sometimes it's on a night that I really shouldn't even be drinking. I got to work the next day. It's stupid, you know, and I don't know, like, see, and this is the other thing. It's also come into my life as a. Like, when I was going to do that Stephen Pressfield interview, I was nervous about it, and that vice really crept in full speed because, you know, I was doing pretty well on it, and then all of a sudden, I started to get nervous about that, and I would just drink, you know, randomly. I would, like, sometimes it would be Sunday at, like, 1 in the afternoon, and the prospect of going somewhere and not being drunk, I was like, I don't want to, or not drunk, but just not... You know, I wanted to be buzzed, so I would, like, just really quickly, just before I walked out the door, I'd pour myself two quick stiff drinks, down them, and then leave.
Oh, you know? Man.
Yeah, and it that stopped. I haven't done... I only did that leading up to the interview, like, a week and a half before, because I was getting really nervous about it.
Mm.
And then with this issue, you know, and just kind of, like, the stress of... My job's getting really stressful right now, and all that kind of stuff. But I guess this last week kind of proved to me that I can do it. But at the same time, like, on Saturday, I was out with my girlfriend, and I told myself I wasn't going to drink at all until Wednesday, but we were at a bar because she was... And then I thought to myself, you know, I don't need to cut it out completely, and I don't know if I ever... I don't know if I can, at least at this point in my life, cut it out completely. But, I don't know that... I don't know. I'm just kind of airing my grievances right now, because I'm pissed that... Because I can definitely tell that I have some sort of a connection with it. You know, what? I don't think it's alcoholism per se, because this last week did prove to me that I can stop it. It's not that powerful over me. But at the same time, the fact that, you know, like Saturday night I was out and I was like... there were those moments where I started rationalizing with myself why I could drink. And I ended up drinking anyway, but it was because I realized how stupid the whole thing was, and that one night wasn't going to hurt anything, and sure enough it has, and I haven't drank since either, but, you know...
See, when I go out to bars, it's always a situation of where I'm driving, so I can only have a drink an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So every bar I ever go to now, it seems like I can never drink a lot.
Yeah.
I can't even remember, like, the last time I went to a bar and got drunk. Seriously.
Yeah, see,
I'm always driving.
I usually drink before I go to the bar. That way I don't have to spend a lot at the bar. And then I'll kind of cool off for a little bit, and I'll have maybe three or four drinks. There's only been a few times... And that's the other thing, because with my tolerance, you know, I don't puke anymore. I don't think I've puked in a long time. And I think you said you got that way, too, to where you don't puke. You just kind of, like, sit there, and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, but not now. Now I puke.
Right, but before, you were at that point, though, yeah. You know, when you were in school, especially. I remember you talking about it a few times.
Yeah, you can just drink nonstop, and never ends.
And you just wake up, and you might feel like shit, but you can go at it the next night if you wanted to. And, you know, I've kind of been at that point for a while. And that's not to say that I'm not trying to brag that I can drink a lot, because I can't drink as much as other people, but for me, my tolerance is up big time. And I guess, like, I'm curious what other people's mindsets are. Where I just go somewhere and it's like, oh, I'll just have one cocktail. Because what's the point? You just spent $5 on something that's not even going to get you buzzed. Why just drink water? It's stupid. Yeah. If you're going to drink, I always think that there's a purpose behind it, which is stupid maybe, but...
It's just weird that your drinking has come along rather late, you know, in the life cycle.
Yeah.
You know? I think most people go through their big drinking period in their early 20s.
You know what stemmed it to was when I moved in with my old roommate, Mike... and then we were in the band and everything, like, you know, every day, and he and I weren't the best at this, because we would buy half gallons of rum, like, a couple times a week, and we would be done with it, you know, and being in the band, we'd practice twice a week, and we'd kind of drink while we were practicing, and, you know, we always were encouraging each other to kind of get buzzed or something and watch movies and stuff, and that really got me rolling again when I started living there. So it hurt Abler, I guess. But I don't know. So anyway, I just kind of wanted to bring that up. If anyone has any feedback, if they've ever gone through a situation, it's kind of cool to hear from people who have had problems with it, or people who I don't know, who just kind of have a perspective on what their philosophy of drinking is, where they see it fits into the social, see it fitting into the social context and whatnot. But so yeah, you have any final thoughts on that?
I'm drinking a beer right now.
Yeah, I just opened one.
All that talk about drinking, you know?
Yeah, it got me thirsty. Next topic. Okay, this is my Mysterio topic, because I didn't bring it up to Tanner at all, but it's something that I was thinking. I think about it on a daily basis, at least three times a day. A situation comes up where I have this choice, and this choice is simple. It's either I ruin my entire life or I don't. Okay, and the choice comes in this form. Let me give you. I've got two real-world examples. The first one happened to be back in college. I was sitting down with a professor, and she and I, it was just her and I in her office, and she and I were discussing my future, and it was like a really good in-depth conversation on history programs or whatever. And at some point, she's talking to me, and I'm listening, and I'm staring right at her, and I'm thinking to myself, if I just spit right in her face right now, what would happen? If I spit in her face, would she cringe? Would she slap me? Would she tattle on me and get me ejected from the department? What would happen to me if this happened? Is my whole future hinging on this one decision? Do I spit or do I not? And the impulse gets so powerful that, you know, I almost feel as though one of these days I'm gonna snap and I'm just gonna try it just to do it. And another one came up just last week. I was at the Renaissance Center, and I stopped up at a coffee shop there, and I got a coffee, and I'm walking on this little platform thing, and there's people below me, and I thought, how funny would it be if I spilt my hot coffee all over that woman down there? And, like, the scream she would let out, how funny would that be? And then I thought, like, and if I did that, no one would see me. I could pretty much run away, unless they had cameras that I didn't see. But then I thought, if I did that, like, the scalding third-degree burns on her body, you know, that's really mean. And then what if they did catch me? I could just hear the news reports, like, you know, those local newscasters getting their rocks off with their, like, what was this man thinking, you know, and going on their stories. So... And I brought it up to my girlfriend, and she says she has these thoughts too, which I found very interesting. So it crosses genders, and I was just curious if you ever have those moments in real world situations where technically the other person thinks you're into what they're talking about. You could be talking about, you know, Thomas Pynchon or whatever you know in your literary classes, and they're just they're talking to you, and you're staring intently. But meanwhile, on your mind, you're saying, I've got to piss, and what if I just stood up and pissed in their face right now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it comes down to that whole thing where, you know, you get on a high, you're up somewhere high, and you look down, and you just want to jump off, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I get that a lot, too, I'd say. I can't remember a specific instance, but I know a lot of times it always has to do with doing something completely just ridiculous and offensive or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this almost primal urge to, like, punch someone in the face or something, just something completely
right.
unexpected. And it becomes, mm-hmm. and you start thinking and thinking and thinking about it to the point where your brain starts going, like, oh my God, I might do this, you know, and then you've got to, like, totally stop yourself because you're on the edge of doing something so absurd. But doesn't that make you think that, you know, could that be, like, some root of, you know, what Tourette's is?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that, you know, if someone did that and then got punished for it and then they're labeled insane for the rest of their life and
yeah.
stuff like that? You know, everyone's walking that fine line of just turning into a completely insane person.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, but that impulse, for instance, the other day even, now I just remembered another one. This guy was talking to me about this really important issue at work, and he's kind of like a big bear-looking kind of guy, you know? He's got this whatever and big-ass beard and shit, and I thought, if I just wound up and just, like, punched him in his face right now, I can just see him, like, reverting into this, like, you know, like, coming after me kind of thing. And how funny it would be. It would be like a Benny Hill episode or something. You know, I'd be running around the cubes and shit. But, like, what would happen to me? I try to think, because that would be, you know, a lot of times in your life you look for that watershed moment, and it's sometimes very obscure. You don't know when things changed for you or whatever. But, like, with things like that, you can dictate exactly when things change. You,
yeah.
can say, you know
yeah.
when things changed? It changed when I took a big shit on that person's automobile. You know, it can be anything you can think of. You know, when I was, like, in the middle of a conversation with someone, and I gouged their eyeball out. And, you know, anything can happen. I don't know.
You know, I get, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I get like that a lot in stores, and
yeah.
I get so bored in stores or whatever, or so frustrated with everyone around me, I just start thinking about crazy shit I could be doing that would just, like, turn the whole place upside down, you know? And it also is sort of an empowering thing, like, I'm in this store, I hate it, I'm in Walmart, I hate it, I hate every fucking person around me, I just want to get my shit and get out of there, but... You know, if I took this axe and, like, you know, slammed it into somebody's head, all of a sudden everything would change.
Yeah.
And it would be a whole different situation, and I would be free, you know? Like, but then everyone would be like, he's the fucking crazy-ass murderer.
Yeah.
But it'd be like, no, it was just an impulse.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, and how do you decipher what's an impulse and what's true insanity? Because... like you said, we probably got guys locked up who acted on this impulse, which luckily neither of us have, and they're spending the rest of their lives in jail, and they're like, holy shit, it's all because, you know, I decided at that one point it was good to punch that baby in the face, you know?
It sort of reminds me of Foucault's Madness and Civilization, where he talks about, you know, how arbitrary what we think madness is. You know, when we label somebody insane or mentally ill, you know, all we're doing is drawing lines and saying, okay, this group is normal and this group isn't, when it's all really just arbitrary.
Yeah.
You know, there's, like, it's very difficult to prove some specific medical, you know, physiological basis for madness. It's just, okay, you're abnormal, but we're normal, you know?
Yeah.
And those impulses could easily just draw that line around you and throw you out, you know, when you're just a normal person in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it all the time, about the fact that if there was ever a way that people could read my thoughts, I would be considered not only a dick, because a lot of people who are like, you know, they think I'm all buddy-buddy with them, a lot of times I'm thinking a lot of bad things about them,
mm-hmm.
you know, but just, you know, if I could be imprisoned for my thought life, if not put on trial and given the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, it was just an interesting concept, and it happens to me pretty much on a daily basis. I think about that kind of thing, and how it could just ruin my life totally. I, you know, the funk I could sink into after indulging just one of these impulses would, I mean, just the magnitude, the repercussions of it would be unfathomable.
And it's probably just a reaction to societal order. You know, we all know the social rules, but then we all just obsess about wanting to break them, you know? And I guess that's why people are obsessed with serial killers and criminals and, you know, Billy the Kid and that sort of thing. Like, people who just step outside of that order and do exactly what we're all sort of fantasizing about constantly because we're restricted by it.
Yeah. So, anyway. All right, well, that's enough of that topic. Do you have any other things that you want?
Hell no.
Administrative things?
No. We're done.
All right. Yep, that concludes another podcast. So, see ya.
You have been listening to This Just In, recorded and distributed on Monday, August 7th, 2006. For more information about this podcast, as well as our literary journal, which has an issue coming out later this month, please visit www.the-means.com.
Someone else. There's gotta be someone else.
There's got to be someone else.